Well, you heard the young lady right there. That means that with that forecast, our long, lingering autumn is still smiling upon us, isn't it? What beautiful weather. Indeed, indeed. Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you so much for your company, and I hope you are able to get out and about and savor every second of this beautiful weather indeed. Weather, we're going to be talking a lot about that today. That's on everybody's mind, isn't it? Yeah, Megan just said 46 degrees in the Twin Cities. We have sunshine smiling upon us right now and a high today around 57 degrees or so. Maybe we'll just round that up and try to reach for 60. Why not? We're on a good weather roll. We had some moisture late in the week here. That's good. We'll talk more about that, but it's a good thing, even though we maybe get tired of the gray skies and all the water coming down on our heads. It is recharging the soil moisture, and that's good news for the coming spring. More about that. Let's, at 12:07 right now, start, how about a little quiz to start things off this Saturday? There are very few places on planet Earth where temperatures can vary as much as 175 degrees. That is to say, a 175 degree temperature spread or swing from the coldest to the warmest, all in the same basic place. So where might one of those few places be on Earth? Yep, right here, Minnesota. Temperatures here have been as high as 115 degrees and as low as minus 60. Really puts us on the worldwide weather map, doesn't it? For sure, literally. There is extreme football, there are extreme workouts, extreme this and extreme that, and yes, we have extreme weather. Little wonder that weather is topic A around these parts. What with the coming cold weather season, and yes, it's bound to come, we know that, we thought it a good time to talk Minnesota weather with the experts. Pete Boulay fits that category. Pete is with the Minnesota Climatology Office in St. Paul, the folks who, among many other important things, compile the weather data day in and day out, thus giving us a picture, an official realistic picture of weather events, weather trends, and yes, weather extremes. Peter, thanks for coming in today, my friend.
Glad to be here, Stan.
Good to see you again. Pete and I are well acquainted. When I was for many years with Minnesota News Network, I called you oftentimes.
Yes, you remember once or twice, yes.
Or what, a day? Weather being so important, obviously, that, you know, for a newscaster and for news recipients, consumers all across the state of Minnesota and Wisconsin, weather's a very big deal, and you guys are and gals are so kind. You at the Climatology Office and the National Weather Service. Why don't you just tell us briefly and simply what's the difference between where you work, the State Climatology Office, and the folks out at the Weather Service?
Well, the folks in the Weather Service, their main job is to forecast the weather, and our job is to tell you what it was like yesterday.
Okay. They look forward, you look kind of backward.
Absolutely. Okay. I can't help but look forward once in a while for fun, but we, in general, our windows face to the east, so we can see what already has happened.
Okay, I got you. And I would often call, well, I almost always would call you at the end of a month, and you would give us the recap on what the weather was like. The temperatures, mm-hmm. the highs and the lows, the amount of precipitation, that sort of thing, gave us a picture. Sometimes it's exactly what we expected, and sometimes you'd surprise us. The data would sometimes say things that we didn't realize were happening. So
absolutely.
I'm glad you are the great record keepers there. That's great. Pete, we're going to be talking, obviously, about what's ahead. People are, well, here we are, getting deeper and deeper into November. People, topic A with them, if weather is topic A, then the topic A question among weather people is what can we expect in the way of a winter, you know, mm-hmm. this time around. And we will get to that as best we can get to that. There's no way that you can predict exactly how much snow, how much cold we're going to get, but there might be some indicators. We'll get to all that. Plus, yes, we'll even throw in your take on the Thanksgiving forecast, too, and we'll get all that in just a bit, okay?
Yep.
But first, we have just come through a week, might I say, two grim weather-related anniversaries mm-hmm. this past week. November 10th was the sinking, the 40-year anniversary of the sinking of Edmund Fitzgerald, yes. And some people call that our Titanic here in this part mm-hmm. of the world, a great maritime disaster here, not in terms of lives lost, but in terms of just the maritime tragedy that happened so close to home. And then November 11th, this year falling on a Wednesday, November 11th, of course, the 1940 Armistice Day blizzard, 75 years ago, this past Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Hard to believe. As a kid, I heard the tales, the legends about that, Pete. Mm-hmm. And that is a momentous weather event in the history of this state, isn't that?
Absolutely. Armistice Day was one of those kind of weather events, very typical of a November-type storm. In effect, Armistice Day is still the storm we compare all other storms to. It was the strongest, dropped the most liquid precipitation from a storm, over 3 inches of liquid in November.
Wow.
And a lot of that was snow. And so that is the storm we compare all other storms
That's
to.
That's right. In fact, your own website says the Armistice Day blizzard of 1940, the defining blizzard of the 20th century,
yep,
right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Pete, before we get into the particulars from you, there's a marvelous book out some years ago, came out in the 1980s, called All Hell Broke Loose, Experiences of Young People During the Armistice Day 1940 Blizzard. A guy named William Hull put it together. Not a climatologist, not a weather guy, but an amateur historian who I think did great work, and we're in his debt for having compiled the anecdotal stories of young people right here. Mm-hmm. Who endured that terrible storm. And so there are about 160-some recollections here, anecdotes from those people. He interviewed about 500. He had, or at least had 500 contributors to this. And, of course, many are gone now. And he did this work mm-hmm. back in the 80s before so many of them left. So we have their recollections. If I may, excuse me, I would like to read just a part of what Mr. Hull, William Hull, wrote as a preface to his story and sharing these anecdotes of the people who endured that horrible storm 75 years ago. All right, he talks about Armistice Day 1940. He writes, the day started with misty rain, which had fallen almost constantly over the weekend, sleeted for a while, and then became snow. Although snow had been forecast, no one had any inkling the amount would be more than a few inches at the most. No one thought this would be a record event. The Armistice Day was just another one in some people's thinking in 1940. True, it was full of memories for men who had fought in the war to end all wars, that's World War I, of course, mm-hmm. and for families whose sons and fathers were about to be involved in the present World War. We called it World War II. But Armistice Day was not solely a day for great mourning. In Minnesota, it is deer hunting season when thousands of hunters, mainly men, head for the woods for their great sporting challenge. In Minnesota, that usually meant going up north, to the northern woods from Cloquet on up to the Canadian border. For many others, it meant going to the rivers for the elusive mallard ducks. Well, it meant getting away from job difficulties, from World War worries, from the bitterly fought presidential election, Roosevelt going for a third term. People hoped to step aside from the mad world for a day or so. Armistice Day 1940 was a Monday. For many people, just another Monday. City and town people got up, went to work, realizing as the day progressed that something severe might be coming their way. During the day, the wind increased to 32 miles per hour, gusting up to the 60s. The situation was fast deteriorating, and downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul workers were concerned about getting home. Many did not make it. Drifts were piled up with such suddenness that thousands of cars became stalled to block roads. At 3:30 in the afternoon and later, the visibility for drivers was virtually nil. Cab companies suspended operations, and late in the day at 9 p.m., the streetcar company gave up attempting to maintain schedules. Train service seriously hampered, and to some points in the south and west, there were stopped bus lines out of the city. Minneapolis were stopped completely. Airplanes were grounded. People all over the state started holing up simply to live through the blizzard. They had experienced bad storms before, and Minnesota people are known as a tough and hardy group of survivors, but they knew they needed to find shelter, and find shelter they did. Downtown hotels in the Twin Cities quickly filled up to overflowing. People ganged up to occupy every possible sleeping place, four to a room, more if necessary. People slept in their offices, on desks, on the floors. Travelers were happy to find a small-town gymnasium with pads and blankets. All over the state, Minnesotans were trying to keep alive. It was bad, just how bad they didn't yet know. It was as if all nature were on a rampage, unleashing its raw power on the universe. The whole state was hit, as were other states, At first count, there were 10 people dead in Minnesota, 3 in Wisconsin, plus many known to be missing. The United Press Wire Service, a news service, quickly put the dead at 52 in the Midwest and noted that the storm battered furiously at the eastern seaboard. 50-mile-per-hour winds tore at property in New England and the middle Atlantic states as temperatures dropped to freezing levels there. Icy squalls and snow pounded at the Rocky Mountain region for the fourth day. It had, writes Mr. Hall, it had been a hell of a day. Hence the name of his book, All Hell Broke Loose. Peter, that's literally and figuratively a chilling account.
Absolutely.
Tell us from from a weatherman's point of view exactly what did happen there. We hear the anecdotes that the day started out really unseasonably warm, calm, and the people, hunters and the rest, walking around in short sleeves, that sort of thing.
Sure. Well, the weekend before was rather seasonable, highs in the upper 30s to lower 40s in southeast Minnesota. You know, temperatures are near 50 degrees at La Crosse. There hadn't been a real big snowstorm yet, and you got to picture what it was like in 1940. No radar, no satellite. They were relying on weather observations from the Dakotas. Now, they did have in the forecast turning cooler with some light snow in the forecast, but nobody, of course, anticipated the magnitude of the storm that was arising. And much like a day like today, beautiful holiday day. A lot of people went outside, went to southeast Minnesota, especially duck hunters, enjoying the nice weather, and they're hoping the ducks would start to move. And when they did, they were caught out in it.
Oh boy! And again, a little warning, if any, your eyes were your best weather forecasting and your skin, because things were getting, as you said, it deteriorated so quickly. So we had great loss of life around here. And the forecasting tools in the day, I believe the National Weather Service, the service that forecast for this area, was based in Chicago in those years, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Based in Chicago, they issued their outlook, and, they didn't anticipate how strong the storm was going to get. And that we'd had a powerful area, high pressure behind it, ushering very cold air. In a rapid fashion that turned the rain over to sleet, then snow. And that's really what happened. And the hunting was so good, unfortunately, the hunters didn't want to leave because the ducks were running out ahead of the storm. And so a lot of them were caught out in it. And those small flat-bottom boats, they couldn't handle the waves on the Mississippi in the backwater. So that was part of the problem there. And then they weren't dressed for it, for sure.
Armistice Day blizzard, 1940. We just marked the 75th anniversary of that. Pete, let's just talk about that. How does it stack up, that blizzard, that weather event, compared to what we've experienced in the years since? Is it still rank as the worst or one of the worst, or where is it?
Now, some of the records have been broken in the Twin Cities from that event. The Halloween blizzard did, and there was, and that does set the all-time snow record for
1991.
1991 Halloween blizzard, absolutely. 2.83 inches of liquid from Halloween, 3.32 for Armistice Day. So it kind of gives you some idea how much worse Armistice Day was. The visibility, a lot less than Armistice Day. In downtown Minneapolis, the visibility was near zero for 6 hours. And Halloween blizzard never really got that bad.
No.
So Armistice Day still remains de facto the worst blizzard of the 20th century in Minnesota.
A personal anecdote here, Pete. My father, a very, very young man on that day, 1940, was at work in downtown Minneapolis.
Oh.
My mother, the woman who, I was not around then, thank you, but she was out at home in Medicine Lake, out by Lake Minnetonka. And back in those days, there were just almost wagon ruts, you know, between Minneapolis and way out that way. So my father somehow decided, yep, things are closing down in Minneapolis. I think I'll try to get home. Bad decision. Well, many people, they couldn't know the ferocity of the storm, how it would continue to build. So he tried it. He did. And I don't know what time in the afternoon he left, but it was not until late, late at night that somehow, some way, miraculously, he could not see where he was going. He actually did find their house. He went from tree to tree, he told me. When he knocked on the door of what he thought was our house, my mother came to the door, the woman who would become my mother, and couldn't open it because of the snowdrifts. Finally, she managed to get open, she from the inside, he from the outside.
Wow.
And she didn't know who this figure was standing in front of her, totally coated with ice and snow.
Yeah.
And, you know, that close to dying like so many others did. Just an absolute miracle that he got home.
Yeah.
Had he to do over again, stay downtown. You know, sleep on the desk or on the
many
floor.
Many did.
Sadly, many didn't.
Yes.
So that one, I know there are a lot of people out in the audience right now. If they didn't live through it, they are the sons or the daughters or the grandsons or daughters of people who did. And heard about. That's part of the great lore, the myth, isn't it, of Minnesota weather.
For people that didn't live through it, if you're outside today, just picture what it was like the morning of November 11, 1940. It was a day a lot like today. What are you wearing right now? Would you be able to survive below zero temperatures right now and driving snow? I'm wearing tennis shoes.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, that's what was going on that day.
And that
day.
Drastic change came with just within hours, didn't it?
Absolutely.
Within hours, it
drastically changed.
Right. Well, it gives us a chance or an opportunity to say thank goodness for the people like you and the sophisticated technology. People still grouse, oh, you guys missed the forecast yesterday. Well, day in and day out, all of you do a great job. I know you collect, you don't forecast, but basically we have sophisticated technology that usually is pretty darn accurate or close to it.
Hats off to the National Weather Service. Yeah. Everything they do really helps out.
Everybody's going to miss once in a while. There's no doubt about it. It's going to happen. You know, it's
hard to predict the future sometimes.
Isn't it though? Let's talk about that other grim anniversary that we marked, and this came this past, what was it, Tuesday, the 10th day of November, and of course that marked this time around the 40th anniversary. It's hard to believe, isn't it? 40 years ago, the Edmund Fitzgerald, the big ore carrier, which set out on November 9th, 1975, from the Superior Docks, right near Duluth, you know, Superior, Wisconsin, heading down lake, and we know what happened. She went to the bottom and got caught in the gales of November, as they're called out there. Lake Superior in November. Pete, tell us about that.
Well,
it's a place not to be found, isn't it? Don't go there.
Yeah, it's a place that can change quickly. Just like the Armistice Day storm, the Fitzgerald storm, started out with a low-pressure area over Kansas, rapidly intensified over Lake Superior. Winds whipped around the low and really churned up the waves to great heights. And, you know, they took precautions going across the lake. They knew there was a storm. It was no surprise, but they just didn't make it.
Yeah. I think your website notes that the Weather Bureau forecast from Chicago, let's see, I've got the wrong one here. I want to talk about the Fitz here.
Yep.
The weather forecast was not unusual, if you said, for November, and the National Weather Service predicted that a storm would pass just south of Lake Superior by about 7 in the morning on November the 10th, which is the day that the Fitz went down.
Yep. Yep.
There was an ore carrier captain out there who somehow, some way, made his own forecast, and he predicted a vicious storm would. Well, it turned out he was right. And again, I don't know how he divined that it would happen, but he was absolutely right. At 2 a.m. on November 10th, the National Weather Service upgraded its warnings from gale to storm, forecasting winds, you've gone over some of this, 35 to 50 knots, that's 65 to 93, let's see, 40 to 58 miles per hour. And shortly, you know, just hours later, the Fitz went down. Just couldn't get out of those. I don't know, how high were the seas? The waves were incredibly high. Just amazing.
Waves can get as high as a four-story house. So 10 meters high, that's how high they can get on Superior. And those are big waves, and it's not like an ocean where the waves are coming one direction. Sometimes they hit the shore, they come back, and so you got kind of that sloshing effect going on too. So chaotic seas is what they ran into.
What exactly makes that lake so vicious, though? Is it a combination of the water temperature falling low, more winds kicking up that time of year?
Yeah. We're in that changeable season right here. You know, where low pressure centers could develop rapidly, you got a wide open expanse of water, and if you go in that water, you're not going to be able to get back out. And that's part of the reason why it's so deadly. I mean, the temperature is superior, about 38 degrees. So you're not going to last long in the water. So if your ship goes down, you know, you're just not going to make it. And that's what happened back then.
Right. The practices, the shipping practices these days, I don't know if the ships stay off now in November or not.
No, they still, until the locks close at the Sioux locks, they keep going. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it varies every year, but I do know they still are active.
Yeah, they are.
Until they can't get through the locks anymore.
Pete Boulay with us here from the State Climatology Office. That's a division of the Department of Natural Resources here. The folks who keep the records, who kind of look backwards and help us tell us where we have been as far as weather goes. And we're going to look back on our weather this year, Pete Boulay,
sure.
Here in just a minute. We'll check that out. And, we will look ahead, too, because a lot of you folks are going to be traveling for the Thanksgiving holiday or even sticking close to home. You're going to want to know what's going on as far as the weather goes. Stan Turner with you right here. It's 1225. Speaking of the weather, it's 46 degrees right now, and we'll be right back. The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street, North Stillwater.
Hymie's Haberdashery presents the Hymie's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Hymie's Oath? Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Hymie's.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Wolf Swanson.
And hey, I'm Pat Wolf.
Our motto has always been to ask for Wolf. But Prohibition forced our family to stop brewing Wolf beer. To this day, our legacy can still be seen all over Stillwater.
So it's only fitting, Kathy, that Wolf beer is back in the valley, especially after a 93-year dry spell.
Don't you think Great-Grandpa Joe would be so proud?
I do. And that's why we invite you to visit wolfbrewing.com and click on Beer Finder to locate a store near you. And then ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer.
Hear every touchdown, field goal, and tackle right here on AM 1220 KLBB. This is Wayne Larrabee, the radio voice of the Green Bay Packers. Your Packers station in the Twin Cities is AM 1220 KLBB.
We've got the Packers versus the Detroit Lions Sunday, November 15th. Pregame at 10 and kickoff at noon. You're listening to the home of Green Bay Packer football on Club 1220 KLBB.
We are back. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you very much for coming along for the ride today. Well, it's a deceptively beautiful autumn day, deceptively because we're not used to this kind of mild weather this time of year, are we? Usually have some snow cover on the ground by now and things are really cold, but we're dodging the bullet so far this year, but we know it's going to change. We think it's a great time to talk weather right now. We couldn't do better than to have our good friend Pete Boulay from the State Climatology Office in here with us today. Pete, thanks again for coming in.
Glad to be here.
And thank you to your comrades over there, Greg Spoden, and you got a new guy, Kenny Blumenfeld. Is
yep.
that it, huh?
Yep, Kenny Blumenfeld.
You folks do good work over there. You're
Thank
the
you.
Best record keepers, and you give us the proper perspective on what we have gone through. And boy, I'll tell you, Wednesday night around these parts, Pete, lots of rain. I don't know, well over an inch, I think. Maybe you got you're the guy with the official stats. What did we do here? How much rain did we pile up Wednesday?
It was the fifth wettest November day on record.
You're serious?
Yes.
What?
Yep, on the 11th, up 1.73 inches of rain at the airport, so fifth wettest November day.
On record.
Yeah, on record, yep.
Good Lord, I had no idea. And the winds, my goodness, especially overnight.
Yep, we had winds to 42 miles an hour at the airport, so very respectable.
Oh, respectable, you call it, huh? Yes. Frightening, I call it. Boy, those branches banging against the house. This was a spinoff, wasn't it? This was part of a big weather system that clobbered other parts of the country. Just a recap here. Stephen Corfitti, a meteorologist in the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma, called the big weather system a classic mid-November storm. This is for other parts of the country. He said, basically, there's a warm side and a cold side to these systems, and the unifying threat is a very strong wind field all the way around it. No kidding. He said, so on the cold side, just as we experienced last Wednesday, he said, you have a chance for snow or freezing precipitation accompanied by very strong winds and occasionally blizzard conditions. On the warm side, the thunderstorms that grow in the strong wind environment tend to rotate, you know what that means, and if they rotate long enough, And if this moisture is great enough, they can produce tornadoes. Mm-hmm. So we came perilously close to that, Pete.
Yeah, a lot of people saw a lot of thunder, or saw a lot of lightning and heard the thunder from that storm event. Maybe one of the most lightning show we've had all year the other day. And then Des Moines had a tornado.
They did have a confirmed tornado.
They had a tornado. Fairly late in the year to have tornadoes that far north. So. But very active storm, very typical of a November type of a storm that would develop.
The folks out in Colorado Springs, there's a photo here, a lot of cars stranded off the road because of ice and snow. Mm-hmm. Just that witch's brew, no doubt about it. Yeah, folks, in terms of tornadoes, we all think, oh, no, June, July, August, mm-hmm. that's about it. The truth is, the records here, which you guys keep, show that the earliest tornadoes can hit here in March mm-hmm. and the latest in November.
We've had a few in November,
yeah,
absolutely.
So let's not have any this year.
Probably not. All right, I think we're done.
Pete Vallée, yeah, you look in the rearview mirror as far as the weather goes. Mm-hmm. Let's look back at Minnesota weather 2015. Mm-hmm. What were some of the distinguishing features that you can tell us about of our weather over the past months?
Sure. Well, the probably the biggest storm event we had all year was the July 12th, 2015 blowdown. That was the one that hit the central part of the state, winds 70 to 95 miles an hour, even in excess of 100 miles an hour. And that's the one that hit the Brainerd Raceway, knocked over the grandstand there, caused a lot of damage in Pillsbury Forest and hit the Gold Lake resorts up there really hard.
I got up there a couple weeks or a few weeks after it happened, and they were sawing down the trees, great stands mm-hmm. of timber that had been on those resorts around Gull Lake and north. Taken down, blown away. They did a remarkable job, they at the resort and in the surrounding areas, of cleaning up the mess. It was a huge mess, but mm-hmm. that's time is money to those folks. They've got to make it or break it there.
They bounced back quick. So.
They did, but it was still a vicious storm. Mm-hmm. I think one of the worst they'd had.
Yeah. And around here in the Twin Cities, we really didn't have a lot of real big storms. But what probably stands out the most this summer was the smoky skies.
Ah, tell us about that.
Had smoke from fires in Canada. The winds were just right to drag that smoke across the state. Mm-hmm. And on July,
it looked like snow.
It looked like snow. Yeah. July 6th was the densest smoke we had, and in the Twin Cities, we had visibilities down to about 2.5 miles in smoke.
Wow.
And St. Cloud was down to about 1.25 miles in smoke. So it really looked weird, this pall of hazy skies.
Right.
So that's probably the thing that stands out the most. We didn't have a lot of hot weather. Actually, it was quite pleasant. Uh-huh. Most of the summer is very pleasant, great for growing crops. So in all, a very benign summer.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Tornadoes. My impression is we've had fewer in recent years. I'll knock on my head because I should knock on wood when I say that.
Yep.
But fewer tornadoes.
Yeah, fewer tornadoes. We had about 24 tornadoes for the state this past year. Now, there's still some number crunching going on. It could go up higher. There's lots of very weak tornadoes that the Weather Service surveys and tries to find out. The final number will be higher than 24, but really not a lot of notable activity for tornadoes this year. Kind of a quiet year there, too.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
And we should decode this. When you hear weather forecasters, especially news types, and some of us say, that was an F1 tornado or an F2, what are we talking about? We need to define those terms.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that is meaningless to people. What does it mean?
Well, F scale of tornadoes is based on how strong the winds are. And they start out if F0 is the weakest tornado and F5 is the strongest. We haven't had an F5 tornado in Minnesota since about 1995.
What are the wind velocities in an F5?
Oh,
I'd have
to look that up.
Well, roughly,
we're talking, 250 miles an hour winds or higher, or something like that for a very strong tornado. The weakest tornado, F0, F1, is what we typically see in Minnesota. You're talking about hurricane strength for a F1 tornado kind of thing. So that's usually the kind of tornadoes we see. We usually don't get F4s, F5s mm-hmm. too often here. Mm-hmm. It happens sometimes. The one that went through Minneapolis, F2, F1 style damage. So mm-hmm. That was a little 4 years ago. So.
Yeah. And how did our friends in the agriculture business make out, the farmers? Was it a good growing year for
them? It will be probably the highest corn yield ever in the state. Just the preliminary numbers from that, and also probably one of the highest soybean yields, too. So it was the perfect growing conditions for corn, timely rains, not a lot of heat. You know, everything just kind of came in line perfect for a bumper crop of corn and soybeans, too.
Well, I hear these terms, global warming, you know, yep, and all that sort of thing, and the weather changing and all the rest.
Yeah.
What about that? We're in on that, are
so
we?
So we got a few hours
climate
here,
change?
Right, to talk
yeah,
about
right.
climate change.
I asked this knowing it's a politically charged issue,
yes,
too. I realize that there are some politicians who don't believe it and mm-hmm. some who ardently do. What are the statistics? It's hard to argue
with the
numbers.
Climate change... in a nutshell, climate change is easier to think of as temperature, not precip. Temperature, we have a good handle on what's going on with temperature. Precip, harder to forecast, as you might imagine. We have seen the temperatures go up overnight and in the winter the most. So, if you look at like February, overnight minimums are way higher across the entire state. Think about, do you see a lot of... We don't see minus 30 anymore in the Twin Cities. They don't see minus
That's
40 in St. Cloud
anymore.
Yeah, well, there's winners and losers in all these things, okay. Also, the losers would be we might not be able to keep that snow on the ground as long as we used to, too. So... Not to say we won't have winter anymore, but, that's one of the outcomes is we just don't keep a snowpack like we used to.
Wow, And that has consequences, as you say, too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, winners and losers. I saw guys with plow blades mounted on their trucks, and they're just looking for work.
You know, in Duluth, they have some aging, I hate the word, infrastructure, but their storm sewer lines, are some of them are 100 years old. Mm-hmm. They're buried deep, of course. Mm-hmm. But when they don't have a sufficient snowpack, those water lines sometimes they'll break. Because they don't have that insulation from the snow.
Yes, that's absolutely.
One example of how costly and a negative thing mm-hmm. that light snowfall can be.
If you don't have a snowpack, the frost can dive deeper into the ground. And septic tanks, septic lines for all the people listening in western Wisconsin.
Yes,
you have a septic.
Yes, indeed.
You know that if there isn't snow, you got to start worrying about how far down that frost is going. So that's another aspect of climate change. If we don't have a snow cover, then the frost can get deeper.
Mm-hmm. Upside and downside.
Yes.
Sounds good at first blush sometimes has some negative consequences,
yep,
doesn't it? Well, I mentioned, of course, we want to look forward. Your business is looking backward, mm-hmm. but we do have a lot of folks out there, I think just about everybody. I don't know what that sound is. Maybe it's from your laptop making weird noises.
That.
Okay, that's all right. Thanksgiving's coming up here, my goodness, a week from Thursday next. Okay, a week from this coming Thursday.
Yep.
A lot of people will be on the move, traveling to Grandma's house, and some leaving the area, or at least traveling the region. And some of us will be staying home, but all of us have a common denominator. We want to know what the heck the weather is going to be. And everybody's waiting for the other weather shoe to drop, Pete. You know, this long, lingering autumn.
Yes.
I was talking about rhapsodizing about. We're wondering when that's going to come. But what can you tell us from this early line right now about Thanksgiving weather?
If you had asked me yesterday, I would say the weather looks great for the rest of November. However, things happen in weather,
about to drop.
there is a bit of a change coming in the air. For all the people out there listening here, I would say get out and enjoy today, enjoy tomorrow, because we might not have that same weather for much longer.
Why don't you put that in other terms, Pete? Just go ahead. We realize this is a forecast. It's not an exact science, but what are you thinking is going to happen now?
I'll call it an outlook, not a forecast.
Let's call it an outlook.
My outlook is maybe a return to more November-like weather coming for the second half of November.
Being coy.
Yeah,
what are you saying?
According to the Climate Prediction Center, that takes us through the end of the month, it was showing a tendency for above normal temperatures. So right now, that would be normal is today.
Okay.
You know, yesterday, highs in the 40s.
Okay.
So it looks like now we're staying about normal. So maybe we're losing the 60s. You know, tomorrow will be a gorgeous day.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, it looks like the same kind of wet pattern is going to continue that we had last week. Mm-hmm. And maybe not so much in the way of snow, but looks like, more wetness is on the way. And definitely, the balmy conditions might be a little harder to find for the second half of November.
Here's what I have in front of me right now from the National Weather Service, which I pulled off their website this morning. So this is from your colleagues at the National Weather Service at Chan Hassen, right?
Okay.
Okay, so Monday, just as you say, rain likely for the Twin Cities, mainly between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m. Otherwise, cloudy Monday, a high near 52. Chance of precipitation Monday, 60%.
Yep,
at this point, Pete, they're talking rain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, rain likely again, a 70% chance, a high of 54. Wednesday, rain likely once again, 60%. 50% chance. High 53. Now, this is getting to what you're hinting at. By Thursday next week, we're looking at a 30% chance of rain, a slight chance of rain, and here it comes, snow, but only a slight chance. No mention of accumulation. So, but a high. The temperatures are falling. This is the main feature, I think, of Thursday and Friday's weather. A high of only 40 come next Friday. And again, a slight chance of rain and snow. Okay. No mention at all from accumulation.
So far, so good, right? Yeah, so you don't have, you know, usually around Thanksgiving, I always think of the first time you have maybe some snow on the ground. Yeah, so,
what are you thinking this time around? And again, outlook, it's a guess, I realize.
Yeah, well, a typical Thanksgiving has more clouds and sun. Highs, temperatures, you know, usually in the upper 30s, lows, middle 20s, upper 30s is a typical Thanksgiving. Now, last year we had a low of 4 below zero. So I can tell you this.
Wait a minute. Last year last Thanksgiving,
year,
4 last below?
Year,
do you remember
4
that?
Below zero, yeah.
Kyle, do you remember that? 4 below? No, I don't
remember. But
I've erased it from my memory.
Yes, yes. It was the coldest Thanksgiving in years. So, you know, so for sure, we probably won't be that cold.
Thank you.
But you know what? We probably might not see 60 degrees either.
Okay,
so you know, a very typical Thanksgiving. You know, I would have to go with climatology at this point. That's almost 2 weeks away. So
I would
say middle 20s to upper 30s the high, and kind of it won't be like today or tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. Of course, I could always be wrong.
Well, and, you know, anybody can be in your business. Again, you don't pretend to hit it 100% every time.
Yep.
But in terms of the chances of snow, maybe some, maybe not. We don't know.
Well, we're getting to a time of year around Thanksgiving. That's when you start to see that transition. You're on the brink of winter.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to see more snow than rain
when it starts
to fall. But, you know, the way things have been going so far this month, we've seen a lot of rain. And we might get another inch of rain next week. So, we might have one of the wetter Novembers in history by the time we're said and done by the end of the month.
The brink of winter. Well, we've been pushing that brink farther and farther back.
Yes, that's right. Yes. You know, last year we had 3 inches of snow on the ground already. So
this time?
Yeah, at this time.
On this date, 3 inches of snow right here last year.
So,
we're on a roll, man.
Yeah,
good weather,
not too
bad. Pete Boulay of the State Climatology Office with us here. We're going to take another break, come right back with more weather, and we're going to be looking ahead to winter 2015 and 16. Stay with us.
Back in the late 1800s, if your brewery burned to the ground, it usually meant you were out of business for good. But Joseph Wolfe rebuilt his brewery and continued brewing his beer until Prohibition hit. And a 93-year dry spell isn't stopping great-granddaughters Pat and Kathy from bringing it back. Go to wolfbrewing.com, click on Beer Finder so you can bring it back to your home. Ask for Wolfe's, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolfe Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street, North Stillwater.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents the Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Jaime's.com.
Computer Repair and Services is well known for simple pricing and excellent customer service. That's one of the reasons we are the oldest computer repair business in the area. Computers are the specialty, but they also repair tablets and phones like iPhones and Nooks. That's right, Computer Repair and Services is your one stop for technology. If it's not repairable, it can be recycled for free. Computer Repair and Services, located on Highway 5 in Stillwater. Click with confidence and call 439-7544. That's 651-439-7544.
Here we go. Oh, boy, the weather is on our mind very much. It always is, isn't it? Because we're Minnesotans and Wisconsin, but it's really on our mind this noon hour because, well, here we are on the cusp of winter whenever it's going to bite us for the first time, really. We've got Pete Boulay of the State Climatology Office in studio with us right now, the keeper of the records. These folks know where we've been, and sometimes there are indicators, Pete, where we might be going. Mm-hmm. Nothing we're not going to say accurately, but I'm wondering, you just gave us a bit ago a summary of our weather for the summer months, the spring and summer, a pretty decent ride for us. You know, no real violent weather except for a couple of days. So a pretty good deal. Is that in any way a predictor of what we can expect for the winter months?
Well, we have right now a strong El Nino. And what that is a warming of the equatorial Pacific water. And we're having one of the strongest El Ninos on record. And what that means for Minnesota typically is warmer than normal wintertime temperatures. It's a flip of the coin for precip. Anything could happen. So if there's fans out there who like winter storms, there's still hope for you.
Well, a lot of people make their living off snow, too.
Yes.
You know, the resorts and the snowmobile people and all the rest. And we understand that, and sometimes we badmouth too much snow. But we fully realize that snow is a good thing for a lot of people. But predicting what's going to happen is pretty difficult.
Yeah, you can't. There's no way to predict how much snow will happen in winter. We all like to play around and think we can. So we all have our guesses. But really, a movement of 100 miles in a big snowstorm matters quite a bit. And so temperature-wise, you get a better idea of what's going to happen. What happens basically in El Nino is the polar jet goes farther north. So we don't get it as often here in Minnesota.
The polar jet.
The polar jet.
The stream of air, fast-moving air.
Yep, fast-moving air up above that drags those Alberta clippers across the state time and time again. That lifts northward into Canada more, so we don't get in that cold air as often. Maine still gets hit by them.
Right, right.
And then in the deep south, there's a subtropical jet that stays down there and keeps the moisture down there, too, for them, and keeps them a little cooler, too. But for us, we're usually high and dry. For the most part, still could get a pretty good storm up in our neck of the woods, too. But, you know, in general, we stay warmer. I looked past at some of the other strong El Ninos. There was five of them to look at, basically. And most of them were much warmer. You know, some of them, one of them was the second warmest on record. That's the 97-98. There was only one that was a little bit on the cooler side, 56 coldest, so that was the only one. The other four were warmer than normal winters.
So if things play out as we hope they might or they appear because of this strong El Nino, our winter temperatures could be a bit above normal.
Yep. December, January, February. I'm talking meteorological winter.
Has that already started?
Hasn't started yet.
Not yet. Okay,
so we're looking at one of the warmest falls on record, even with no matter what happens for the rest of November. We'll still finish with the top three warmest fall on record.
Really?
The
record's going back to the 1880s.
Well, for the Twin Cities, back to the 1870s, but the entire state back to about 1895. And for the most part, November will be top three warmest, too. So we're still looking at one of the warmest falls on record.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep.
That's the sound bite you just gave us right there.
That's right.
The money lines right there. Yep. Mark Seeley, our good friend. He works with you folks over there, too, and he's on the show quite a bit, and he's the author of Minnesota Weather Almanac. He did a second edition, an updated one, just about a year ago, and we have Mark on from time to time. He says of the month we're in right now, Pete, though November will occasionally tease with a 70 or 80 degree Fahrenheit reading, and more often than not, the weather reminds Minnesotans to prepare for winter, yes. Mm-hmm. The last of the fall chores must be done. Plowing, soil testing, composting, mulching, bringing in the dock, winterizing the car, bagging fallen leaves, putting up storm windows, finishing outdoor painting and all the rest of it, and reviewing the snow plowing contract. Yeah, the Novembers of 1999... 2001 and 2002, the warmest in recorded state history, were so mild that most of the month could be utilized to wrap up these fall chores. Imagine that out in your shirt sleeves, raking leaves on November the 30th.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could do that tomorrow, probably. Yeah. November 15th, you'll be able to do it. And 2001 is the warmest November on record in the Twin Cities. Actually, the first the warmest on record, 46.4 degrees at 13 degrees above normal.
Wow.
We're about 11 degrees above normal so far. So we're a lot like 2001.
We really are. are. Now, all this yip-yap we heard, I think it was last year or the year before, about this polar vortex.
Yes.
We had these vicious cold snaps. Polar vortex. Is that just a new word for the same old thing? An Arctic cold snap? Or what is the deal?
Well, you know those media types. They latch on to these catchphrases.
That's us.
You know?
Yeah. Mea culpa.
the polar vortex wasn't invented 2 years ago. It's always been there.
It's always been there.
Always is the polar vortex. However, if you had asked me, are we going to have 53 nights of zero or colder, I would have thought, well, it couldn't happen anymore. But it did. In the Twin Cities, we had 53 nights of zero or colder.
Oh.
And
what year?
13-14. So it wasn't just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, funny thing about that is we never really
there's nothing
had.
Funny about that.
Well, no, it is because we never had a really extremely cold night. We had all those below zeros, but we never had anything 25, 26, even 27 below zero.
Extreme cold.
Nothing extreme cold.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have some people do 10-year weather cycles where the weather kind of repeats itself? You know, 10 years ago it was just like this, but, you know, it'll change and get...
Yeah. If there was such a thing as a weather cycle, there'd be a lot of meteorologists out of a job.
Oh.
So that gives you my opinion on weather cycles.
Okay.
Can't predict them.
Okay.
I wish you could. If you have a super dry year, there's no way to know the next year will be dry or wet. 1976 in the state, one of the driest years on record. 1977, one of the wettest. So we have had, there's no way to know.
Now, you use computer models. The forecasters do.
Yep, you guys don't so much.
The forecasters of the National Weather Service do. There are two types. They're kind of rivals now. There's a U.S. computer model and a European computer model.
Yep.
What I hear from you experts is the European model is kind of the better one right now. It's the more accurate one, maybe, huh?
Yeah, we're always looking for the better mousetrap.
We are.
Yes, we are. And some computer models are in favor when they get it right. If they get it wrong, everybody starts looking at other computer models, and then you're always comparing back. Now, forecasters in the United States, the two models. There's two main models they look at. I'm not going to go through the details on them.
Please don't.
Yeah. But there's two of them that they look at, and that's the main ones. And then there's other ones like the European model that they look at.
The European model has done pretty well, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has done very well with some of the events.
With
sure,
some
absolutely.
Events, sure. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. And sometimes not.
Yeah, sometimes not.
Okay. On balance, is the European model better, more accurate predictor? Or not?
To be honest with you, I haven't looked at it that close to know.
All right.
There's two models we look at here. One's called the GFS.
GFS.
And then the
I used to drive one of those. Yeah.
NAM. Now we used to have the NGM model, which we called the no good model. Yeah. So they all have their
Thank you. Pete Boulay with us from the State Climatology Office, talking weather. What else? Doppler radar.
Okay.
Well, we hear especially the weather guys and gals on TV always say, but Doppler, here's a Doppler picture. Doppler.
Yep.
In good straight old common sense language, plain English, what is a Doppler radar all about?
Well, what that does is it shoots a microwave beam out from, like a tower. You might have seen, like, the radar dome towers, if I'm not mistaken, KSTP had one at one time.
I was there a long time,
yes.
And there was that big dome out on the front lawn there, up on a tall, tall scaffolding, and it's still there last time I went by.
So basically, it's bouncing this microwave beam out and hits an object. It could be a rain droplet. It could be a bird, dust, anything, and bounces back, and they could determine the speed, velocity relative to the radar. And you can get the Doppler effect when you hear, like, a siren go by, a car go by, and you can hear the siren pitch change. That's the Doppler effect.
Wow, okay. Yep. This detects rotating winds.
Absolutely. You can detect that because it picks up on the movement of particles. So
for tornado detection.
Yep, if something's swirling around in the cloud, that's a bad sign. There might be a tornado going.
And you see it on the radar picture, do you?
I personally don't, since I'm not I'm not at the National Weather Service, but
they see it,
that's what they look at, sure.
Okay. A hook echo or something like that.
Yep, the old days was a hook echo and old radar. That's what they would look for is the big hook. Now, if you see a giant hook on a on a thunderstorm, it's pretty obvious there might be something going on.
Now, this tornadoes versus straight line winds, Pete, derechos can be in that, a kind of a downburst straight line winds. I think the big blowdown up in the Boundary Waters Canoe area.
Yep, 99. Yep, that was one of those.
Derecho, so they can be just as vicious and wicked and lethal as a tornado.
Absolutely. A tornado hits a very small point on the landscape. a derecho or a large area, straight line winds will affect a wide area and can have as winds as strong as a weak tornado. Mm-hmm. So they actually can be more destructive, the straight line winds, because they affect a bigger area.
I'm fascinated by your record keeping. In the Twin Cities, your records, our records, and go back how far?
Well, actually, they go back to Fort Snelling. About 1820 is the first records, the first weather records. Camp Coldwater, right on the shore of the river down there, right close to where Minnehaha, Minnehaha Creek goes into the into the river there. Mm-hmm. So that's where they started. Then Fort Snelling, up on the hill there, and they kept weather records there. And St. Paul and Minneapolis kept their own records. They had two weather bureaus, one in St. Paul, one in Minneapolis.
They had a rivalry
at one time, absolutely. Okay. And now there's just one, and they're out in Chanhassen. But they used to be at the airport for many years, and so a lot of the weather records come from the airport.
How accurate were their weather forecasting, the mechanics back then, the thermometers and the wind gauges and the rest? Are they reliable? I mean, do they just give us an accurate picture of what things really were like back in 1840?
Well, they started doing forecasting when the Signal Service Corps started up in the 1870s, 1880s. And you think about how many weather stations they had in the 1870s. West of here, not many. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have a lot to go off of. Things really improved. Not only after the Armistice Day blizzard, but then there was an Ides of March blizzard in 1941 that killed a lot of people. That's when they started giving more forecasting duties to the to Minnesota, the Twin Cities, and that definitely improved out forecasting right there.
That's an ominous sounding thing, the Ides of March blizzard in March of 1941, right after the just months after.
And same winter.
Winter. Goodness! Wow! Well, we want to talk too about some indispensable people who help you folks forecasting and all the rest, especially when the weather is brewing and happening, and that would be the Observer Corps. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We rely a lot on volunteers, people that aren't paid to do it, but they like to watch the weather. Almost everybody in Minnesota has a rain gauge.
Yes.
So what we do is we have this something called COCORAHS. It's COCORAHS. So you can Google that. It's COCORAHS.org. You could be a citizen scientist. You could be in Minnesota. You could be in Wisconsin. You could be in the Bahamas, if you'd like. And
I'd like that.
You like that, being in the
Bahamas?
Months,
yeah.
So you could get a rain gauge, and then you could record the weather right online, and then you could be part of the whole network, and the Weather Service uses this data to verify their forecast.
Wow,
so
wow.
You can be a helper, too. Mm-hmm. And all you need is a rain gauge and a computer or a phone, and you can log right in and record your data.
Are these folks like storm spotters, too, during a tornadic activity? Are they
there? Can if they want to. Mm-hmm. You can put in a comment saying flooding. Mm-hmm. They love comments. Mm-hmm. Like the big rain we just had last week.
Mm-hmm.
If something was flooding, you put in a little comment saying, roads are flooding or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, or size of hail. How big is the hail or something like that, too. So, you can have as much fun with it as you want.
Wow. So citizens do play a very vital role.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have 1,500 in the state.
Wow.
And actually, with COCORAHS, we have about 1,800 in Minnesota. Now, Wisconsin, they have about as many COCORAHS as we do in Minnesota. So
COCORAHS. Sounds like a fight song for
a hot chocolate drink, right?
Right. Why don't you give that again, the website?
COCORAHS is COCORAHS.org.
Rah-rah-rahs.
Yes.
COCORAHS.
Yeah,
okay,
we're cuckoo for COCORAHS.
COCORAHS, righto. Just a couple of minutes left, Pete. What else would you like us to know about what you do for a living? It's fascinating.
Well, it's great. I have a history bent to my work, and I love to do it, and I've been keeping weather observations since 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, I compared my forecast to KSTP's.
Did you?
Yes,
How did you?
I beat them. Unbiased,
Mr. Hubbard. Did you hear that?
Yes, I beat the. That was part of my science fair project.
Really?
Was, going up against the KSTP weather forecast.
Oh, and you beat them, huh?
I did. Yes.
You didn't even have a Doppler on your.
Didn't even have a Doppler. Nope. Funny how that happens.
Right. How'd you get hooked on the weather in the weather business?
I just liked just watching the weather. So I started keeping a little weather diary. I'd write down the high and low and how much rain or snow fell. And I still do that to this day.
Wow.
I still keep a weather diary. So I just like watching the weather.
If people are interested in getting into this field, What should they do? Where do they go?
Well, use be sure you study up in school, math and physics. Take that math and...
all of my favorite subjects.
Yes, I know. Science, too. Science is great.
Okay.
So go to the Science Museum. Check out there. They got some great weather experiments right now there. You could do very neat things. Make clouds and all kinds of cool stuff. So.
Wow. How about making a warm winter? Can I do that?
Yeah, we'll see about
go to
that.
The Bahamas.
Yeah, go to the Bahamas.
Pete Boulay, State Climatology Office. Peter, great to see you again.
Yep. Thanks for having me here.
And thank
today.
You so much. Come back soon, will you?
I will.
Okay, my friend. Okay. There we go. All right, folks, you're all clued up on the weather. And get out and enjoy today, as Pete says. This is a beauty. So thank you, folks. Have a great weekend. Please join me for the All Request and Dedication program Monday, right after the news at noon, right here on the station. Have a great weekend. Bye.